It's difficult, I think, at the end of summer in the south of the country, and still in the wet season in the north, to think about the cold. I'm ready for a bit of cooler weather now, and you're about to meet someone who knows all about it, because Emma Rowan Kelly is one of few Australians to have spent some time in the Arctic. Emma's a photographer, and in her first solo exhibition, you can see polar bears and brilliant white-on-white landscapes with extra white. Welcome to Life Matters, Emma.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you went to Svalbard, which is Norwegian territory, but halfway between Scandinavia and the North Pole. What was it like when you first arrived?
It seemed like you'd really left another world because it's such a short flight from Oslo, and you've been in, such it's European summer, there's people everywhere, and suddenly you arrive here. And in such a short time, and you're somewhere so remote. It's a really interesting little town. It's sort of got quite a strong mining history.
What's the name of the town?
Oh,
Longyearbyen.
Longyearbyen. Yes. So you fly into there, and it's incredibly scenic, sort of coming into land. And then all the houses are all different colours, so it keeps it a bit cheery when they head into winter, and so they can tell them all apart. So yeah, it's quite a very unusual little place.
I have to admit, when I was reading about you going, about you having been, I was very jealous. I'd love to go to Svalbard. Not many people have been. Why did you want to go?
I wanted to see polar bears, and I wanted to see them in a pristine environment where they didn't have that as much contact with humans, because outside of that main sort of town area, they have their own kingdom. That's sort of all very much. There's not any other main settlements outside of that area, and there's four times the population of polar bears to humans, and that's
How
exactly.
many are we talking about altogether? Do you know?
I think I read the population there is about 2,000, so that must bring them up to about 6,000 out of a world population, I think, of 20 to 25,000 they've predicted. But it's hard for them to know because they're very difficult animals to keep tabs on. They don't have a territory. They wander in all directions for hundreds of kilometers.
Yes.
So it's hard to know, is that, exactly how many there are at any one time.
Yes. And I'd imagine tagging them would be the very bugger of a job.
Yes, well, some of them, definitely some of the ones we saw had ear tags, but only we saw one that actually had a collar, which is a proper tracking collar. But they can only put them on females because the males have their necks are too big compared to the size of their head, so the collars actually
Oh, right,
come
the neck's
off.
bigger than the head.
Yeah, well, and I think that's
Like a
how,
footballer, yeah.
yeah, yeah.
Is it true, you mentioned that there's more bears than people. Is it true that one of the reasons for that is if you become ill or get too old, is that you're kind of shipped off the archipelago?
Yes, it's not actually somewhere that you can ever call your own country. It has no indigenous history as such, and it actually is not, it's not a territory anyone can be permanently at. I think also they found that in the graveyard that they had, that the bodies were actually decomposing because of the permafrost, because it really is quite an amazing preservative.
Yeah.
And so they decided from there on no one could ever be buried there, and that's not permitted.
And I suppose if you were ill, the issue would be how well can you be looked after in such a small community, such an isolated small
Right,
community?
in such a remote area, and really hospital, standards aren't going to be available there the way they would on the mainland. So yeah, exactly.
You mentioned the coal mining. I think it is economically important there. Did you actually
Yes.
see much of it? Because it is this pristine environment, or that at least that's the reputation.
Yes, I mean, in that town, I think all the international mines had closed down, and there are two Norwegian mines still operational, which are pretty important to their economy. But I did see some evidence of some of the closed mines, but really not a whole lot. But I was understanding that that is quite a main employer of that area.
You were there last July, which of course is the summer in the north, and you write in your notes about a group of bears, and we're going to talk a bit about polar bears now, having Christmas in July lunch on a beached whale. That must have been an extraordinary sight.
It was absolutely amazing. I mean, the naturalists, I think, had known that there had been this whale that had been frozen all winter long, and it started to defrost, and knew, well, that's certainly going to attract bears. And one of them hinted to me the night before, you know, clear all your memory cards, get a good night's sleep, tomorrow's going to be a big day. So I was pretty excited to get that tip off.
It would have been hard to sleep, actually.
Yes, very hard. Just generally anyway, but because there's so much happening. And then I was out in the one of the first zodiacs, and we approached, and you could see the whalebone actually sort of underneath the crust of the ice as it was retreating. You could see the whalebone sort of retreating out of the water, and then right down deep underneath, if you looked, you could sort of see this huge skull of the head of the whale, and there were 8 bears in total with 3 cubs. So there were mothers and the cubs, and there were males, and for them, and that was where they were all looking pretty pleased about being there with such an incredible amount of food in front of them. You know, I mean,
because they're not normally very social, are they?
No, they're really solitary animals. You know, to see a mother and a cub, you know, up until the cub is weaned at a you know, reasonably, they sort of depart fairly quickly overall. You just don't see them together ever. It's a really unusual behaviour, and certainly sharing food is not something that they're willing to do. But I think it has been known of before for them to share a whale, but of course it's such a rare occurrence for them to have that opportunity. And I do believe it is signs of adaptive behaviour that they're willing to tolerate each other's presence instead of, you know, being more aggressive in order to to get the food they need.
I have to ask, because whale banquets aside, polar bears are essentially white.
Mm.
The landscape's white.
Yes.
How do you spot them?
You need the best naturalists in the business. So travelling with National Geographic and Lindblad, they were incredible, and I went with them because I knew their naturalists were great. And you would be up on... and sort of hear one of them say, okay, we've spotted a bear, and there would be this creamy speck in the distance, and they would say the creamy speck means that's a bear.
Right.
So they're extraordinarily talented at being able to find them, and there would generally be someone up on deck doing that pretty much all of the time. But then we were quite lucky that at other times, you know, that speck then was quite a curious speck and actually walked all the way over to where the ship was in the ice to investigate what we were, because I guess they don't have a predator really as such out there, and they're quite curious and
hungry.
And hungry, and from kilometres away they can smell
your protein.
Yeah, we're food. There's some sort of food going on over there, and it's moving towards me. Perhaps I'll go check it out.
On Life Matters, you're hearing some of the remarkable stories from Emma Rowan Kelly. She's an Australian photographer. She spent some time last northern summer in Svalbard, which is Norwegian territory, but between Norway and really the North Pole in the Arctic. Now, we've been talking about bears, and they're one of the most dangerous animals in the world. I mean,
yes.
How do you get close enough to get a good shot?
It does help if they're well fed and they have got food in front of them, keeping them quite occupied. I think if they're very hungry and on land, they're very dangerous and you really do have to keep away. Approaching in a zodiac, if you're on water, obviously you can make a pretty quick getaway.
Yes.
And that certainly means that you've got a bit more time to know about the approach. So being that they've got all that food in front of them and, you know, why would they go hunting you for more when they're there quite busy? So that was also really good fortune to see them in that environment of being quite content and, you know, eating a whole lot and then having a bit of a sleep and watching them being very playful. Certainly the mothers and cubs, watching the cubs play and frolic in the snow, it was a magical opportunity to watch.
Come back to that because I think it's important. But I asked you about finding them, you know, the white on white. What about photographing them? Doesn't that pose some pretty hard technical challenges?
It does, because obviously cameras focus really works on contrast.
Yes.
So you really are needing to really concentrate pretty hard to make sure you're focusing on, you know, the black of the eye, the face there, the dark features, so that you can actually get that sharp. it's difficult. Yeah, it is quite difficult, and especially the weather as well. There's a lot of fog and the lights changing a lot of the time, which makes quite an ethereal sort of magical environment.
Beautiful.
But it also it can mean that they're very soft as well, so it can be challenging. I think the closer you are, obviously, it helps because you can. If you can fill the frame, that is really advantageous. And I was also lucky because where they were in the water is very dark, and down below the line of the ice, I was able to get a couple of shots of sort of bear portraits where they really had a dark background, so they really popped out from that, and it was much easier to get them sharper that way.
Emma, you were saying just a moment ago about, they'd feed and then they'd sleep, and if you had a mother with a cub, they might play. And it all sounds lovely, but I know you went with scientists, this was a National Geographic Society thing. What are they saying about the prospects for the polar bear?
Well, I mean, I wanted to see them where they're probably doing their best, really.
Yes.
And overall, I mean, one of the facts of the trip was we sailed further north than they'd ever been able to sail before without a full icebreaker. And we got up to 81.6 degrees north, and North Pole being around 89 degrees, is about 1,000 kilometres south. And basically, in the past, they've just not been able to get that far. So every year, I think they're saying, oh, this is the furthest north we've been able to go. And that's concerning. And I know that...
Because they're ice dependent, aren't they? They must have ice.
Yeah, they need to have reasonably... It's really the seals that they depend on for food. The seals actually need to have reasonably shallow water for feeding. And they, are best hunted from the ice by the polar bears. So if they don't have the ice to hunt from, obviously, then they're going to starve. And I have heard that in Canada and Alaska areas, they've got something like 6 weeks less hunting time each season just because that's how much less ice is going on.
And essentially they feed in the summer and then they, what?
In the winter.
They hibernate?
No, they actually, they're a bear that doesn't actually hibernate. So they sort of feed through winter, and then in the summer that's generally when they get a bit.
Yeah,
and so you'll find that they, because they're not able to hunt as much at that time. I know in Canada they're often found sort of in the rubbish tips and whatever where they're, closer to where people are settled and what have you, and that's a bit of a concern. And I didn't want to see that part of it, or I didn't want to make a record of that.
Now, you were there for about a week and a half, and I guess I'm wondering what that was like, because I know it was continuous daylight, really, wasn't it?
It was broad daylight. I thought actually the light would get, that you would say, oh, it's daylight, and it would be sort of like a low light overnight. But it really was bright because it was right over summer solstice. And, it was so bright that you really couldn't tell what time it was at all. You'd get those beautiful golden hours of light that you sort of get at dawn and dusk here, and you'll get a very short period before you've lost light. Well, you get them for hours and hours and hours overnight there. So it's pretty hard to sort of convince yourself to go to sleep.
It's kind of disorienting.
It completely. I mean, you'd look outside, it would look like it does now, and then you'd realise it was 3 o'clock in the morning and think, oh, goodness, I've got to get to sleep because I have to be up in a few hours and do it all again. And so I guess the thought is you just think, well, I'll sleep when I get home, because there's just so much to see and do. And you'd be getting in your cabin getting ready to go to bed, and you'd look out and go, oh, it's just changed again.
Yes.
It looks wonderful, and run out on deck and have to shoot some more of the scenery.
Well, the exhibition's in Sydney at the moment. We'll put details on our website. And I know you're hopeful that it can go interstate. What were you trying to say?
I really wanted to, I guess I wanted to get people identifying emotionally with these animals, so that it's not just that something happening in the other end of the world, climate change, starving lonely bears on ice floes in the middle of the ocean. Oh, it's all very sad, but what can we do? I actually wanted people to look at these animals the way that they do their own pets and really identify and say, gosh, they're just like us. They want to be happy. They want to have the things they need and be content. That contentment is pretty magical stuff to look at every day, and I guess, you know, to really remind people, gosh, let's care about them. Let's do something about this. Let's make sure they don't disappear. I don't want them to become a mythical animal, you know.
No.
I want them to to stay around.
Emma, it's been really interesting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Emma Rowan Kelly is an Australian photographer, and there's a link to some of the photos that we've been talking about on our website. Do make sure you have a look. They are amazing. You feel you can reach out and touch the polar bears and even the water dripping from abc.net.au/rn/lifematters. Don't go away. Next, what's got you talking? Feedback for the week.